is Haber v. Biomet. Mr. Dahm.
May it please the Court, good morning. I'm Albert Dahm, and I have the privilege of representing the appellant, Paul Haber, this morning. I hope to discuss four points this morning, but the utterly decisive point, and the one I'd like to address first, is this. The District Court's misinterpretation of the party's 1999 arbitration agreement led the District Court into two incorrect decisions. First, the District Court incorrectly determined that the arbitration agreement only covered a subset of the party's claims, specifically those involving Sarasota County. Second, as
what is it you're at? I'm puzzled. What exactly do you want from us? What relief do you want?
We would like, Your Honor, a decision vacating, reversing the determination that there was, that all of the claims were not subject to arbitration, and there's an issue as to whether or not the court reached that issue. We believe the court...
Wait, answer my question. Do you want an order in which we vacate the district judge's decision?
We do. Vacate and remand with instructions to order the parties to arbitrate all the claims.
So you want us to order arbitration?
We do.
Of everything?
We do.
So if that's what you want, is whether this is something that's appropriate for us to reach at all, given the fact that the Indiana State Court has already decided the precise issue between the precise parties, and Indiana tends to follow the Restatement Second of Judgments, which has a lot to say about what finality is required for purposes of issue preclusion. And this really does seem to be, as they put it in the restatement, sufficiently firm to be accorded conclusive effect.
Well, under Indiana law, this ruling by Judge Nation at the Indiana trial court level is not a final ruling.
But as the restatement points out, there's finality for purposes of appeal, and then there's finality for purposes of issue preclusion, and they aren't quite the same. You can have a final judgment for purposes of issue preclusion that's not appealable yet. You can have something that's appealable that's not final enough for issue preclusion. So it can go in both directions. And I don't see anything from this Indiana State Court decision that suggests that that court is just temporarily deciding that the 99 Sarasota County issues get arbitrated and the 95 agreement, which it sees as a separate agreement from the 99 agreement, stays in the Indiana State Courts and gets a judicial resolution. It's done.
Well, in Indiana, we agree that there is a distinction between those two concepts, Your Honor. But what we asked for below, and it's a little unclear from the record, and given how it was presented, we asked the Indiana trial court only to arbitrate the issues of the claims brought under the 1999 Act. We specifically pointed out that we were appealing the district court's decision having to do with the 1995 agreement. So what the trial court ruled on was a decision about a stay. It granted the motion to compel arbitration under the 1999 agreement, but denied our motion then to stay everything else pending resolution of the arbitration, which hasn't commenced.
And I'm so not that so sure. I mean, in the appellee's brief, they've appended this order from the Hamilton Superior Court number 1, and the court actually refers over to the district court's decision, the Southern District of Indiana decision, and orders the arbitration to proceed. I'm looking at the third page of the judgment. This is Appellee's Appendix 3. Orders that the 99 agreement proceeds to arbitration, denies the motion for a stay of the trial court proceedings, and actually says in that the plaintiffs may continue to litigate in this cause any and all claims that are not directly related to the 1999 agreement. I don't see anything vague about that, actually.
That's true. That is what the order is. It was given in the context of a motion to compel only under the 1999 agreement.
But why does that matter if the Indiana trial court has finally determined, no matter what it was originally asked to do, it has issued an order resolving this? And why should we come in and reinvent the wheel, given 1738, given the deference we owe to state court decisions?
That decision to stay can be revisited at any time. Say, for example, the record develops that in all of the arbitration, in all the distributor relationship contracts between Biomet and its distributors, it has these very onerous ADR or all-encompassing ADR provisions. And we say to Judge Nation, see, now we have discovery. It is the intent of Biomet and its distributors to submit all these issues to arbitration. So revisit that stay issue, number one. And number two, under Indiana law, that is not a final decision. So that can be revisited.
Well, now we're going back to the other thing. But the concept of finality, I really think it would surprise me very much to see that kind of revisiting. Now, judges can even revisit under 60B, so it's not like revisiting is impossible under or the state equivalents of that.
Why did the Indiana judge append that additional order about the 1995 agreements if there was, because your suggestion is there was no issue, it's just about arbitration of issues under the 1999 agreement.
I think he was very much influenced by what the district court did, and that's why he quoted the district court's language on the scope of the party's arbitration agreement. And so we go back to our original point.
But did the other side ask the judge to make clear that litigation could continue under the other?
Yes. In fact, we asked the court to stay under the 1995 claims having to do with the 1995 agreement so that the arbitration issue could proceed under 99. And also we made it clear to the district or the state trial court that we were appealing the Southern District's ruling on the scope of the party's arbitration agreement. So all of this, where we find ourselves today, stems from the district court's, in our judgment, misinterpretation of the party's arbitration agreement.
Now, when the district court issued its opinion, one of the problems it had was the fact that you were in the Southern District of Indiana and not in Chicago, to the extent that you were talking about arbitration. Did you ever make a motion under 28 U.S.C. Section 1406 to just have the case transferred to Chicago?
Not a formal motion, Your Honor. We did, as part of our request, ask the court in the alternative to transfer the case to the Northern District of the Northern District of Illinois. And obviously that was never...
When did you do that?
It was part of our papers that we filed in the Southern District. We were not granted oral argument, and so then we got the order that we did, and then we took the appeal. And obviously the reason for the appeal is the question of what really is now the scope of the party's arbitration agreement. And you can see the box that we've been placed in as a result of the district court's order. We are left now with trying to debate whether or not the district court's decision is final as to all issues, the scope of that, and what the state trial court did in saying, look, go compel under the 1999 agreement. There's no question those claims are arbitrable, but I'm not going to give you a stay under state law, and then quoted the district court's decision. And we believe the misinterpretation of the district court's decision should be reversed by this court. I reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dahm. Mr. Roche?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mike Roche for Appellee Biomet. Your Honors, the district court made the correct decision in this case, which was to deny the petition to compel and to dismiss Mr. Haber's petition. And that decision can be supported in a number of independent ways, but the first and most straightforward is the one on which the district court really premised its opinion, which is that under Section 4 of the Federal Arbitration Act and under the decisions of this court in the Snyder case and the Lauer case, a district court compelling arbitration can do so only in its own district and can do so only in accordance with the terms of the party's agreement. And so where you have in a situation like this where the party's agreement calls for one venue, Chicago, but the party seeking arbitration has filed with a district court in a different area, the Southern District of Indiana, The district court, therefore, cannot issue an order compelling arbitration.
So why shouldn't the district court have just transferred to Chicago? That's what 1406 is for, when you lay venue in the wrong place, and then there is, in fact, another place that would be the correct place.
Mr. Haber, I think, could have sought to transfer under that that provision. The district court may have been able to do so. It chose to dismiss it, which it also could. But the refiling in Chicago still would have been timely at that time. And the Mr. Haber was free to do it. And the court's opinion practically invites Mr. Haber to go file his new petition in Chicago. He didn't. He chose not to do that. This was over a year ago now, or nearly a year ago. And so the district court found correctly that it could not issue an order. And on that narrow ground alone, we think the district court's order here can be affirmed.
Now, Mr. Haber's position is that by initiating litigation in Indiana, your client waived the protection of the Chicago venue.
That is his position, but there is no case law to support that idea. There are some cases out there which talk about the waiver of arbitration provisions or certain aspects of them when the party seeking arbitration has acted inconsistently with those rights. So, for example, there are some cases where the party who wants arbitration first files litigation, then tries to arbitrate, and the court holds that that's acting inconsistent with the right to arbitrate. But that's always involving the party who wants arbitration acting inconsistently. Here we have the party who does not believe arbitration should apply filing in Indiana. And not only that, but a party under a contract which states very affirmatively that if there is litigation, it is to be filed in court in Indiana. So this isn't the usual case where the contract that doesn't cover arbitration is silent as to dispute resolution. In this case, it's somewhat further against arbitration, where the competing clause at issue here affirmatively says that any dispute between these parties must be litigated in a court in Indiana. And that's where Biomet chose to file. So that wasn't inconsistent at all with the notion that if arbitration were ultimately considered to be applicable, then all the detailed provisions of this particular clause, including the forum selection in Chicago, would still apply.
Let me ask you a standard of review question. One way of looking at this case is as a case that poses the question whether the 1999 agreement is really just one more amendment to the 1995 agreement, and thus, once it's amended to include the arbitration clause, all the later amendments just carry that forward, or whether these really are two separate families of agreements or two separate agreements, the 1995 agreement, which gets amended now and then, up to rather recently, and then the other one. So isn't that something that we would approach de novo? It's an interpretation of agreements, right?
Yes, Your Honor, we are willing to concede that this is probably de novo review in this case.
Okay, so why shouldn't we see the 1999 agreement? You know, they keep moving counties in, pulling counties out, moving counties in. So why isn't it just an amendment?
Your Honor, we think there are two different interpretations of these agreements, which we will concede are both reasonable. We think Mr. Haber's interpretation, though, is not. We think one could view the 1999 agreement as these later amendments to the 95 agreement as one series of contracts and related amendments. And we think that that's probably the one that should apply. If one were to do that, though, in fact, the arbitration clause in the 99 agreement is superseded by the later amendments, and there are four to five of them, I believe, after the 1999 agreement. Each of those amendments states that it is incorporating the prior consideration and agreements of, and each of them uses this term, that certain letter agreement dated May of 1995. And so by that language, each of those later amendments incorporates the other provisions of the 1995 agreement, which include, again, not silence as to dispute resolution, but a very specific affirmative clause calling for litigation of all disputes in a court in Indiana. And so even looking at them as one chain of agreements, we think those later amendments pull in the initial litigation clause, and those become the controlling superseding clauses.
The 99 agreement falls away?
We cited some Indiana cases in our briefs on this. Under the Indiana contract interpretation principles, as the amendments go forward, essentially all terms stay current, if you will, or stay effective, except for those that are inconsistent with later terms. And so we argue, and we think it's correct, that because the arbitration clause is inconsistent with the litigation agreement incorporated by reference in the later amendments, that arbitration provision would drop out, but the other aspects of the agreement that are not so inconsistent would remain in effect. Another possible interpretation, which the two courts prior to you that have looked at this found, was that And we think this is also reasonable and a potentially correct interpretation, that the 99 agreement is just separate. The only county it mentions is Sarasota. It talks about paying commissions on sales in Sarasota only, and the like. And so it just is a completely separate agreement and applies to Sarasota agreements and disputes only. And in that case, only the Sarasota-related disputes would be arbitrable. That's another provision. What we think is not supportable is Mr. Haber's suggestion that it's all one agreement and the litigation clause has no effect at all and everything has to be arbitrated. We also, going back to a point you were discussing with Mr. Haber's counsel, as I noted, after the district court came to its finding in this case, Mr. Haber did not refile in Chicago. He instead filed a motion to compel in the state court. And the state court reached a final ruling on that issue. And, in fact, Mr. Haber's own brief characterizes the state court's decision that way. On page 2 at the bottom, it reads, that court granted, referring to Hamilton County Court, that court granted Haber's motion in part and denied it in part, holding that claims arising under the party's agreement executed in 1999 were subject to binding arbitration, but claims arising under the agreement the parties executed in 1995 were not. That court reached a final determination as to which aspects were arbitrable.
Why was Sarasota treated differently from the other counties?
Your Honor, the way in which this case was decided, there was no discovery, so there's nothing in the record as to that. It is, from what I've heard, this is outside the record. From what I understand, it is the largest, most affluent county in the area we're talking about. And so there are a number of reasons.
Why have the arbitration in Chicago, though?
Your Honor, again, there's nothing in the record on this issue because there was no discovery. The two courts that have viewed this have ruled on it as a matter of law. So there's nothing in the record. But I would say that the arbitration cases this court has issued, including Snyder, talk about arbitration being a subject to the party's agreement. A party should be free to decide to do it or not to do it. And if they decide to do it, to decide on the specifics.
I'm curious why Chicago was picked. Is it the headquarters of Biomet?
It is not the headquarters of Biomet, Your Honor, nor of Mr. Haber, but for reasons sufficient to the parties at that time, they thought that would be the appropriate.
Like Chicago.
They apparently like arbitrators located here, at least. And so they chose to do it. But I think that raises an important point, which is that these are treated as creatures of contract, that sophisticated parties, and Mr. Haber is a businessman with a business worth many millions of dollars. He's also a sophisticated commercial party. That sophisticated parties can come to an agreement on how and why they want to arbitrate. This clause also has specifics on the time of day it's going to begin and the time of day it's going to end, what rules of evidence will apply, what the scope of discovery will be in the arbitration. And parties should be free to come to those terms without, you know, having to separately justify each.
Geographically, this was Sarasota. What other areas did he have?
Essentially, if Sarasota being on the west coast of Florida, it almost looks like a half circle around Sarasota. Some of the interior counties, as well as Pinellas and Manatee counties nearby, these companies sell artificial hips and knees, and so as you can imagine, that's an important area of the country.
Sell artificial what?
Hips and knees.
That's big in Florida.
Very big in Florida, Your Honor. And finally, we think the state court judgment is final under these rules, under the Angel Enterprises case in Indiana. An Indiana state court decision held that an order compelling arbitration was final. Now, they didn't say denying, but we think the same reasoning should apply. That their reasoning in that case was that compelling arbitration was final because, if not, a party could just wait until the arbitration was over, and then if he doesn't like the result, take another shot by saying, boy, this never should have been arbitrated at all. So we don't want that to be reopened again. We think that exact same reasoning should apply to why an order denying arbitration should also be final. Because if not, it would create the same problem that a party could then sit back, see how the trial turns out, and if he doesn't like the result, bring an appeal on the base issue of whether it ever should have been arbitrable or litigable to begin with. And so we think the state court's decision here is final for purposes of res judicata, that the district court's decision should be affirmed. It only on Section 4 is the only place we need to reach. And that it should be affirmed in full. And if there are no further questions, I notice my time is up.
Mr. Roche. Mr. Dom, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
It is in the record, Your Honor, as to why Sarasota County was placed back into the party's distributor relationship. And there was an affidavit submitted by a former Biomet executive who signed the distributor, the 1999 agreement, and specifically said to the district court that they wanted to insert an arbitration provision into the distributorship agreements.
Well, this is the contested affidavit that the district court, this is the extrinsic evidence, right, that you wanted the district court to look at?
It is. It is an affidavit that to which they had an opportunity to respond, and they did not, other than say it was self-serving. But that's the reason why this arbitration.
But isn't this guy a co-defendant with your client in the Indiana?
He is.
Litigation?
And it's not clear on the record, he also was a former Zimmer employee, so just so the record is clear about that for the court. But it's not commercially reasonable to suggest that the distributor relationship is geographic oriented. It's a relationship between Biomet and its distributors in which they decided to arbitrate all disputes, not just disputes in Sarasota County, but disputes involving the agreement and or the distributor relationship. And if you look in the arbitration clause itself, it defines disputes even broader than that. So it's inconceivable, because these are sophisticated businessmen, to suggest that they didn't know they had to arbitrate before they took those same claims and placed them in a judicial forum in Indiana. When they did that, the presumption is they waived the right to select Chicago. My guess is it's Chicago because that's where the lawyers were resided who drafted that arbitration agreement.
I'm having trouble with your waiver argument, though, because it is not the same pattern that we usually see with waiver. What we usually see is party A and B have signed an arbitration agreement, and A decides to go to court, and then 18 months in, A thinks better of it and invokes the arbitration clause, at which point B is entitled to say, I'm sorry, you know, maybe if you had invoked it right away, that would have been fine, but you've waived. Here, Biomet had the 1995 agreement. They had a perfectly good faith reason for thinking Indiana was there. I don't know how they can maintain their position that they were entitled not to arbitrate. It seems like you're saying they have to arbitrate anyway, even though they don't think they have to.
That is our position.
How does one? This is not waiver like the normal waiver that I'm talking about.
That's true, but this is where they made a conscious decision, unlike the case of the facts presented to the court in the Snyder case, where it reserved the question of waiver. They made a conscious decision to go to a judicial forum to seek relief for all of their claims, even knowing that their claims under the 99 agreement, by all accounts, two courts' accounts, were clearly arbitrable.
Well, they do have a theory under which it's not, whatever you may think of it, but it's...
True, it is
I
a theory,
that.
But we would submit, Your Honor, with all due respect, that theory subjects them to the jeopardy of waiver. But in any event, we ask the court to vacate and allow all the claims to be arbitrated. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case.